on a book award, which will be announced tomorrow night. It's an Auckland University Press book as well. We'll be talking to Sally just after 11. But coming up now, we've also got the joystick as well, actually, I should say. We'll be looking at the news that's from E3 over in the States this year, just to happen this week. But coming up now, I'm going to play you an interview I did yesterday with Kevin Roberts. Kevin Roberts is the worldwide CEO of Saatchi. And Saatchi, one of the world's biggest advertising agencies. He's a bit of a maverick, old Kevin Roberts. Talks his mouth off quite a bit and is quite... It's sort of got that very, very charming and charismatic American style where he really doesn't do criticism, if you know what I mean. But you'll hear all that in the interview. So I talked to him yesterday, and he is actually appearing tomorrow night at a talk at AUT. But I'll give you the details after you listen to the sonorous voice of Kevin Roberts.
So I'm just about to go on the tennis court and wipe the floor with Andrew Stone, our CEO. So this was, I'm more than comfortable. You're catching me when I'm full of optimism and hope.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. Okay, cool. I was reading a speech you gave, I think last month, in fact, where you sort of started off by saying marketing is dead. When you said that, did you mean marketing as we know it has sort of ceased, well, has to cease to exist in the current climate?
Marketing at consumers, you know, using demographics and targeting them and interrupting them and all the traditional tools that we've been using for the last 20 years, it's all over. You know, marketing, I was just in Korea yesterday talking to Procter & Gamble, telling 200 of their marketing people, you guys are all out of work. If you still think you're marketing at consumers, forget it. What you are doing or should be doing is connecting with an audience, just as you blokes do on radio. We've moved really from, if you like, the interruption economy, from an economy where it was all about attention, into what I call the attraction economy, where you've got to attract people, you've got to engage them, you've got to inspire them, you've got to involve them. So I guess what I'm saying to people is, look, forget about marketing now and think of yourself as connectors. Think of yourself as collaborators. And give up control of your brands. Give up control of your products and let that control go to the consumer. And, of course, companies are terrified at hearing that.
Yeah, well, no doubt, of course. So there's a sort of difference between the bottom of a pan with a spoon as compared to sort of just leading someone gently by the hand or something like that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, currently if you look at most of the advertising on New Zealand television, it's there's some pretty nasty stuff there, right? You know, it's really still selling by yelling.
Rugs, rugs, rugs.
Yeah, you know, price, 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 come in, come in, come in. You know, it's benefit, it's price, value, benefit, attribute. And consumers are going, you know what, we get that. And you know what, we couldn't care less. We take that as a given. We know we're going to get good value. Now, what we really want to know is, what's in this for me? Do you understand me? Do you understand my life? What's the experience going to be like? You know, is this going to be something that's very personalized, or are you telling me I'm a mass consumer, of which I have zero interest? So, yeah, we're in a new world, and I think it's a world where the power has shifted away from brands, the power has shifted away from retailers, and the power is now with you and me, and my mum and my dad, and my son and my daughter, you know, the consumer's boss.
So is it that idea of that you kind of have to sell almost a lifestyle associated with your product? I mean, I think one of the, I don't know, think of an example, something like Apple, for example.
Yeah, it's a great example, right? I mean, you think of the iPod and the iPhone, okay? You know, the iPod has got absolutely nothing to do with music. I mean, you can get an MP3 player that's got longer battery life. It lasts, you know, it's probably more reliable, can be smaller, and it's certainly cheaper. Mm. But you wouldn't dream of it, because iPod's just dripping with kind of mystery, with sensuality, with intimacy. And it's become a love mark. You know, iPod, you're loyal beyond reason, beyond price, beyond attribute, beyond function, beyond benefit. It's just, you know, incredible, incredible loyalty. And that's where all profitability lies. It's where the price premium lies. You know, it's where competitive advantage lies today. You've got to move into the emotional territory, because the pragmatic, practical, functional territories fall up.
The Apple continues to be an interesting case. I mean, no one's done more for getting personal computers into the home and making computers more available just to the average Joe than Bill Gates. Yet he's absolutely reviled.
Yeah, Gates has really focused on the technology, and he's focused on price, and he's focused on the good functional stuff. People, I don't know if they revile him, they probably respect him, but they're not emotionally connected or engaged with him, And I think with Microsoft, they've become disengaged from the hearts of people. So your head says to you, yeah, it's probably a smart move. But your heart's going, yeah, but you know what? I got to have an iMac, and I just got to have an iPhone, and I don't care what happens to Zune and all this kind of stuff. So he's missed that intimacy that Apple have built.
So it's interesting because already there you can see a sort of a setup, if you will, or an environment whereby people's sort of best interests, people bypass their own best interests to get what's new and cool. Is there a danger in that?
No, I don't think they pass their best interests, because I think, the Mac does things creatively that Microsoft software can't do. So I think it's and. You've got to build trust, you've got to build value, you've got to build quality, you've got to build reputation, and you've got to create value. Now, once you've done all that, the consumer's going, well, what do you stand for? Are you going to help, change the world? Are you going to make the planet a better place? Do you make me feel like a better person? Take the Toyota Prius, it's got to deliver quality. It's got to deliver durability. It's got to deliver reliability at the right price. And then you've got something that's going to make the environment better. So that's where it kicks in, really, and.
When a company is going down that line, do you think people are at the point where, and consumers, I mean, do you think consumers are at the point where not only do they have to, they're asking questions about are you good for the environment, are you sustainable and all that, are they kind of at the point where they're also going, and you have to be sincere as well?
Oh boy. I mean, greenwashing has reached an all-time high, right? And it's not going to get better. Because a lot of companies are playing the game for the wrong reasons, right? They're playing the game for compliance, to have corporate sociability programs, and, because they're frightened, right? But you've got to move from green to blue, I think. It's no longer good enough to play at being green. You've got to move into the space of true blue, where you are true, where it's about blue oceans, it's about blue skies. It's about possibilities, not limits. It's about engaging in sustainability across environment, across social, across cultural, not for defensive reasons, but because it's the only way to build a business. It's the only way to grow revenue. Because smart people won't work for a company that isn't true blue going forward, and consumers will use it as a differentiator. They'll go on the internet and they'll take a look at what your social practices are, what your cultural manufacturing practices are, as well as what your environmental performance is. And consumers now are smart. They don't pay a lot of attention to what companies say. They look at how they behave.
I mean, you talked about sustainability being the only way to run a business nowadays. What do you make of things of the idea of carbon trading?
I think it's about getting started. You know what I mean? There is no real antidote to every problem, because every problem has a kick-in problem, and every action has a reaction. It's about getting started, and it's about action. So, I think that any program, for it to have to work, you have to hit the big issues. But honestly, I think the big difference are made person by person, consumer consumer. I don't think sustainability is going to be driven by governments. I don't think it's going to be driven by big corporates. They have to play a role. But really, the way we can change the world is if every employee of every company takes a personal sustainability program and does three or four things, however small they might appear, but if you get 4 million Kiwis doing something, there'll be a tremendous kick-in effect. At the moment, kind of people say, well, I'd like to be involved, but A, I don't know what to do, and B, how can I make a difference? So we've really got to change that mindset, because everybody can make a difference. I mean, my view is that sustainability really is the responsibility of every individual and every consumer, and that's where the rubber hits the road.
You're fighting people's myopia, though. That's a big part of it, isn't it?
We're not fighting it, really. I'm taking a more optimistic view that people want to contribute, and it's not really myopic currently, as they just don't know yet. So, you know, myopia to me kind of rings of blindness. I don't think they're blind. I just don't think that they're completely got all the information yet. They haven't got the program. Mm. Kiwis, when they know what to do, are pretty good at doing it.
Well, most of the time, you like to think so. Just to stay on the whole green issue, I mean, I read an interesting article once years and years ago where the author, and he was talking specifically about America, he was saying, you know, the way to get Americans interested at a national level and completely permeate the population, the way to get them interested in environmentalism is to drape it in the American flag. I mean, how would you run say an environmental campaign?
Yeah, I guess you should never overestimate, you know, Americans, right? So you know, I think that smacks of greenwashing in its pretty most revolting nationalistic way, doesn't it? I don't really like that at all. I think you should start from the bottom up, not from the top down. I don't think a national program's got a prayer. I think you go in company by company, you go in individual by individual, and you help them understand that, you know, losing weight is really good for a lot of reasons. Stopping smoking is good for a lot of reasons. Cycling to work is good for a lot of reasons. You know, turning off your vampire electricals, good for a lot of reasons. Getting your kids to eat healthy is good. Carpooling is good, and why it's good. And you give them things that they can actually reach, touch, and do, and that they can talk about over dinner with their kids, and that they can talk to their friends about. I'm a believer that revolution starts from the bottom up, not from the top down.
Let's talk a little bit about the industry that you're in. I mean, I was reading you came to Saatchi & Saatchi in 1997, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you sort of basically were tapped, or one of the things you were trying to do was turn the place around. And one of the first things you did was just basically drop advertising from the description of the company. Why did you do that?
Because I thought that advertising was going to go the way of marketing, quite frankly, and that we were going to move into a generation that was going to be about experiences, and we were going to move into a liberated generation where technology, aka the internet, would give everybody power. You know, it would give you power to get information, power to make your own messages, you know, welcome to YouTube, power to go behind everyone, so that I thought we were going to move into the age of the idea. And I felt that in this kind of world, that ideas were going to be the currency of the future, and that people were going to be looking for creativity, and they were going to look for innovation, and they were going to look in a way for things that you know, improve their lives and the lives of people around them. So I wanted us to focus on creating ideas that create sustainable growth for our clients, not limiting ourselves to advertising.
Mm. Has that happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the work that Saatchi & Saatchi Auckland are doing, you know, they were the third most awarded agency in the world at Cannes a couple of months back in the kind of direct communications field. I mean, the work they're doing in mobiles, the work we're doing on interactive, far transcends kind of traditional advertising. You know, we're in a universe now where everybody's connecting, collaborating, everybody's networking. It's a very exciting time for creative people, and I think that Saatchi's kind of, you know, one of the, I think we're in the top three in the world in that particular area at the moment.
But as far as the internet and changing the environment and making it all about ideas, has that happened? Because some would argue that, in fact, now there's just too many ideas, and we're back to the status quo.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, I kind of, bad ideas are not too flash, but I kind of like good ones. I don't know, you know. I mean, if you're in a society with ideas, I guess it would be called North Korea or something. I haven't seen that kind of model work, really. Ideas tend to bring happiness. I mean, most of us are looking for fulfillment and joy, and most of us are looking, you know, to give our kids better lives than the lives that we had, and probably that's through new stuff and new ideas.
I mean, just talking to you now, you seem like, you know, an exceptionally optimistic person someone who I'd love to have a beer with or something like that. But, you know, to be cynical, you're working in an industry which is all about
you know, selling products on behalf of your clients. Is that ever
with the first thing, right? Why on earth you would want to be cynical is beyond me. I don't have an awful lot of time for cynics. I find them quite wearing. I certainly wouldn't want to go drinking with cynics. You know, I left England because I was surrounded by them. So I am a radical optimist. I think optimism is an important kind of element for New Zealand, because it's the thing, I think, over the last 100 years that has made us punch above our weight, you know, creatively. I guess Peter Jackson's pretty optimistic kind of guy.
He has to be, yeah.
and you look at some, you know, Tralise Cooper's pretty optimistic kind of designer, and, you know, when the boys went over and did their comedy show over and sold it to HBO when the cynics in New Zealand wouldn't buy it, I think the lads were pretty optimistic too. So, and Dave Dobbin's doing another comeback tour now. That you want optimism, baby, that you're looking at it. And you know, the fact that we're trying to beat South Africa, you know, when all of our players are playing in the UK is pretty optimistic.
But what I'm saying is, you know, you don't seem to me to be the picture of a normal, and you know, apologies for using the word, but the normal advertising mogul.
Well, I wasn't one, right? Because I'd never worked in advertising till 1997. And as soon as I got in, I said, we're not being in advertising anymore. We're going to move into the ideas space. You know, I think, you know, when you define my industry, I don't think I'm part of the advertising industry. We're in the creative industries. And, you know, I mean, I think New Zealand, you know, recognized that last year when Kia were good enough to award me something for creativity. So the industry I'm in, I think, I mean, my dream is simply to make the world a better place for everyone. And we do that by creating jobs, by creating business, because I think sustainable enterprise is the only way to go. I'm not a big believer in nanny states and granny states and communisms and socialisms, I think, you know, or in big charity stuff. I think for us to get 6 billion people in the world all engaged as one, you have to find ways to give them tools to create sustainable enterprise. And that really means creating jobs. So that's kind of where we tend to focus.
Your clients are wide and varied. The one client I wanted to talk about was, and I wanted to ask you if this was in fact true, was I was reading a report in the Washington Times that said that Saatchi & Saatchi are currently working with the, or at least back in 2006, were working with the Israeli government to improve the image of Israel. Is that right?
We do a lot of work with Arab countries, in fact, with Jordan. Mm. We've done some work with Israel, but not for their government and not to improve the image of Israel. No, we haven't been involved in that. We do work with governments. We work with tourism. We've tried very hard to work with New Zealand tourism. We do work in trying to build economies, in trying to create jobs. And we do believe Saatchi has had a long record in that we do believe in doing a lot of social work and a lot of social causes. And we really will try to bring things together, because we think that probably at the heart of most tension is a lack of communication. So we try to, you know, get involved in facilitating that with our skills wherever we can.
I noticed you had a big intake of breath when you talked about Tourism New Zealand.
Mm, one of my bigger disappointments.
What happened there?
We are very passionate about New Zealand, and I think Saatchi & Saatchi New Zealand is the most creative agency here. And I think, you know, for me, New Zealand is the place I chose to live, because I love the people, I love everything about it here. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful place, and every American, every Japanese, every person in the Middle East should be coming here and spending money and time and helping New Zealand move forward. And we'd like to get involved in that. So it's disappointing to me that we haven't been able to persuade the New Zealand tourism people that we can do that.
So you've obviously presented proposals to them and stuff.
On a pretty constant basis, really. but we believe nothing is impossible, and we won't give up, because we've got a lot of passionate Kiwis, and we've got a global network all around the world that can actually help drive the thing. So no, we're not going to give up on that.
Are you happy?
If you can put in a word for us, it'd be great.
I have absolutely no ties with Tourism New Zealand at all, which is possibly a good thing. Are you happy? are you happy with the way that New Zealand is presented overseas? I mean, obviously, to bring it up again, The Lord of the Rings has done.
Yeah, I think the issue that we have with New Zealand is that quite frankly, people just don't know who we are. You know, I mean,
oh, we don't even know who we are, though.
Yeah, and our tourism budget's so small, through no fault of the tourism folks, right? But, you know, boy, oh, boy, there's a lot of noise out there, you know? And so we've got to find new ways. And The Lord of the Rings was a fantastic idea to get people to come to New Zealand without typical ad. You know, that was an idea, not an ad, right? Mm. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Using The Lord of the Rings was a wonderful, wonderful thing. Pure New Zealand was good for a while, but in the end, it has to move on into something that's more intimate, more Kiwi, you know, closer to what we offer, that's differentiating versus other countries. You know, the whole area of green, perhaps moving to true blue, is very interesting for people. We've got to find viral ways. You know, we've got to get presence in different cities in different ways. You know, some of the things that Claire Moira is doing with Essence and taking all our designers, you know, into retail locations in New York and San Francisco is the kind of activity we should be doing more of. You know, our wine people have done, you know, some pretty good jobs, and we just need to kind of pull it all together in new, interesting, more viral ways, really.
What is the advantage if we do that right for New Zealand?
Obviously, tourism is a fantastic plank for our economy, and it's a progressive plank, and it's a plank that creates jobs for our people, that enables us to develop our local culture, because people will come here for our local wines, our local produce, our local culture, not, you know, to partake in the global economy, which they can do in Los Angeles. So it will actually help us develop local industries, you know, and get all our local people involved in growth. That's really why I'm excited about tourism, because it does really deliver, you know, new experiences in hospitality for kids at school, perhaps, who are not, you know, biotech geniuses, but are pretty good at customer service and stuff like that. So...
I mean, you're in your line of work, you're using ideas and you're also using words, and you have a gift for words. Have you ever felt like you've misused them?
No. I don't spend a lot of time, frankly, looking backwards.
But do you ever feel that maybe you haven't used your words as well as you could have?
I don't spend any time thinking about that. I mean, I think that all revolution starts with language. So I'm trying to push the edges of language and vocabulary in order to cut through clutter. So I don't know. There's no point saying things if they don't get remembered, eh?
That is Kevin Roberts there, the worldwide CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi. He is appearing tomorrow night at a talk at AUT as part of the Idealogue Innovation Series Plus. It's happening at 6 p.m. at Bar 3, Level 3 at Sky City. You can ring up and reserve a seat if you like. The number of the ring is 373-3877. It's now just about, oh, it is, in fact, 5 minutes past 11. A quick song now from The Breeders. This is called Walk It Off, after which we'll be talking to Sally Blundell, who has edited a book called Look This Way, finalist in the Montana New Zealand Book Awards.